Welcome to the July 2015 podcast of the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. I'm Dr. Cregan Usher, contributing editor of the journal, and it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Gabriels into our virtual studio. Dr. Gabriels is an associate professor in the departments of psychiatry and pediatrics at the University of Colorado Denver Anschutz Medical Campus. Dr. Gabriels is also the program director of a psychiatric inpatient and day treatment unit for children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and or intellectual disabilities at Children's Hospital Colorado. She has over 30 years of experience developing intervention programs for a variety of pediatric and adult populations. Her clinical and intervention outcomes research efforts have focused on children and adolescents with ASD for the past 20 years. Dr. Gabriels has published two edited books, Autism, From Research to Individualized Practice, and Growing Up with Autism, Working with School-Aged Children and Adolescents. Her article, Randomized Control Trial of Therapeutic Horseback Riding in Children and Adolescents with Autism Spectrum Disorder, appears this month in the journal. First of all, Dr. Gabriels, thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed for the journal's podcast.
Well, thank you for doing this. This is a wonderful opportunity.
Well, to start our conversation, I was hoping that you could let our audience know what first piqued your interest in equine-assisted activities or therapies for children with ASDs.
Sure. I've always loved animals and had interest in studying novel treatments for this population of children with autism, but I had never considered combining these interests until about 2008. When the Children's Hospital Colorado Foundation received a large donation to specifically investigate the benefits of therapeutic horseback riding. It just happened that my proposal to focus on studying this therapeutic riding with children with autism was accepted, and then that allowed me and my research team to then design a pilot study, which was very fortunate because to be able to design a study after you already have funding in place, you can do a really good job. So we were able to identify the ideal location for the pilot, and it was a longstanding therapeutic riding center, Colorado Therapeutic Riding Center, that had a premier accreditation certification status with what I was happy to find out that there was a professional association of therapeutic horsemanship international, at that time called NORA, but now called PATH International. And what they do is they set industry standards for conducting therapeutic riding activities and therapies for special populations. So that was very exciting for a researcher to have standards in place in the field, so you didn't have to worry about that.
Prior to your pilot project, had parents or children reported to you that therapeutic horseback riding was useful? And in what ways, perhaps, had they found it beneficial?
When we started working on designing the study, of course, we did a literature review, and there were very few studies that had been done at that time. But what we could cobble together was that it looked like about between 8 and 12 weeks of therapeutic riding was reported improvements in motor coordination, planning, and emotion regulation, and adaptive and social behaviors. And I also interviewed a number of riding instructors from different facilities and families of children with autism who had participated in therapeutic riding, and all reported improvements in those areas as well. Recently, I actually had one parent, it was a volunteer who had worked as in a riding center and had an extended family member with autism, and she wrote a really nice thing that really encapsulates, I think, everything that everyone was talking about at the time. She said that the transformations that occurred often with the riders when they connected with the horses and then when she was watching the kiddos at the riding ranches was so encouraging and uplifting to her, and she saw them go from tactile defensive to hugging and talking and grooming their horse, and had a special place in her heart for this kind of research. And that's what a lot of these families are saying. All of that information, though, actually helped us design the study and choose measures that looked at those areas of functioning. So we used a measure of self-regulation, the Aberrant Behavior Checklist, which is often used in medication studies, so that allowed us to power the project, and then also had a measure of adaptive social and communication and motor skills. So we're really being very broad at first. mm-hmm. to try to mm-hmm. see was there something working?
Most of our listeners will know something about horseback riding, at least if we've not done it ourselves, that we've at least seen it on TV or in the movies. But I'm wondering, how does regular horseback riding differ from therapeutic horseback riding? And if you could maybe walk us through what the intervention was like for the children in your study.
Sure. So therapeutic horseback riding involves a therapeutic riding instructor who is certified by Path International, ideally, and they have training both in therapeutic horsemanship skills and teaching that to children, but also an extra training that of how to adapt that teaching to special needs children and adults. And so the therapeutic riding experience actually involves the individual riding the horse, and then usually there's one or two what they call sidewalkers or volunteers that are on either side to make sure that the individual is safe, and then there's usually a volunteer leading the horse. They usually occur in small group sessions, so our lessons occurred in about three to four participants in a group at a time, and they're usually in a large arena with the riding instructor calling out instructions and about activities and directions to the volunteers to then assist the participant who's on the horse. For our study, we had 10-week sessions, and before the sessions, there was a screening, a 45-minute screening where they went to the riding center. They were fitted for a helmet. They mounted the horse for the first time and then engaged in a number of different activities, like how do you hold the reins and asking the horse to walk on and saying whoa to stop the horse. And they did some stretching exercises, kind of core exercises while they're on the horse. And then they did a brief trot. And this screening helped the riding instructor assign participants to a specific horse that was best suited for their stature and their movement abilities, and then they were also assigned to a group of other participants in similar in age or ability level. When they attended the weekly lessons, they lasted an hour, but they were 45 minutes on riding the horse, and the lessons were began in the indoor arena that was heated, and then as weather permitted and their skills progressed, they went outside more and more in an outdoor arena. The instructor, my role as an autism researcher was to help guide the instructor and help them understand a little bit more about the autism population's specific learning needs. So we used a lot of visual aids. They did a picture schedule so the kids understood what the routines were, specifically praising appropriate behaviors and using interest to engage, all the things that you do with this population to teach. But each lesson followed had two parts. One was teaching therapeutic riding, so skills like mounting and halting and steering and turning and trotting. And then the other part was teaching horsemanship skills, such as how to read the horse and lead the horse and care for the horse. And so the lessons started with sitting on the bench and then mounting and doing riding activities that involved, learning activities in a game context, like the riding instructor would stand at one end of the arena with a stop sign or a whoa or a go, and then the kids would be at the other end of the arena, and then when the riding instructor would say go, the children would have to initiate their horses to go, and then they would stop their horse when the sign changed. So, practicing skills in kind of a game routine. And then at the end of the 45 minutes, they would then dismount and then lead their horse to the tacking area, and then they practiced untacking their horse and grooming and then putting the equipment away. So that was basically how it went every week.
When I read the intro to your study, one of the things that I was really interested in is how did you come up with a good placebo control for this study? And I was wondering if maybe you could tell us what went into your developing the barn activity.
That grew out of the idea that we had information from our pilot study that had demonstrated improvements in self-regulation behaviors, irritability, hyperactivity after 10 weeks of riding, compared to a waitlist group. And then at the time, there were also some beginning studies that were being written about with kids with autism. But the interesting thing was those studies were all called different things. Like there was therapeutic riding, there was hypotherapy, there was psychoeducational horseback riding, equine assisted activities therapy, but all of them were having overlapping findings. So a decrease in behavior problems and an increase in motor communication, social and sensory processing. The question was, what is it about the horse? Is there something special that's, you know, about the horse that's allowing this change to happen? While it is challenging to conduct a study in a community setting instead of a laboratory, we designed the control condition to have all the same elements as the riding group, but we excluded the horse. So instead, we had a giant stuffed horse who was life-size, and you know they were able to groom the horse and practice with all the different types of brushes and saddle the horse and look at the different ways that horses have emotions, but with their ears. And it was up at the riding center, so you know we controlled for where they went. And although they just didn't have any exposure to horses, they were in the barn, so they were not in the arena. And they were in a small group, and they each were assigned, each participant was assigned a volunteer to work with them. And there was a riding instructor who actually led the group. And they learned the same information that the riding group learned in that same sequence. And they also had, you know, the similar screening process where they went up and the lessons lasted 45 minutes.
How did you get kids to a riding center where they didn't get to ride? How did you get the placebo control group to come so consistently? That was one thing that it really impressed me.
Sure. We did promise them that they had two free ride. We allowed that in the study. They had two free riding lessons at the end of the study. Mm-hmm. So there was something they were working for. So they knew that here I am learning about a horse, and then I have two free riding lessons at the end. So I think that piece built in. And in fact, that's actually what we're studying now with a new replication study. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that the riding instructors noticed was that the kids who were in the barn group, after learning that 10 weeks, started at a much different place than the initial riders.
You know, one of the criticisms of psychotherapies is that because our mental processes emerge from the embodied experience of a particular setting or being perhaps with a particular person, there may not be generalizability to a broader context. As such, though, you know, a child or teen may develop improved skills in an office, you know, office-based setting, it's difficult to know whether they are truly sort of, you know, quote-unquote, better in other contexts. So given the intimate relationship between a horse and his or her rider, I wonder if you believe that some of the benefits observed by non-blind raters might be generalizable.
Well, we did evaluate, although it's not in this write-up, we are writing up the second paper, we did evaluate the participants 6 months after the intervention. And the riding participants who rode for 10 weeks maintained the improvements in irritability that they had made and compared to the control group 6 months after the experience. And that's after, you know, no intervention, no riding, no therapeutic riding. I mean, they had agreed to not ride after that. So that was very encouraging. And then we just looked at the riding group, but they did maintain, at that six-month mark, they did maintain the social communication skills that they had gained compared to baseline. So I think that's pretty striking. We've also got some other pilot data that's showing that there's some translation of some skills for the riding group to their family pet, their improvements in their relationships with their pet, family pets, with all the caregiving I think that they're doing with the horse after the riding. The therapy riding is also one of those activities that's available in rural settings where there's not a lot of other traditional treatment services available. And irritability is a behavior that's a key reason that parents with children with autism often urgently seek therapy and treatment services. Parents may be particularly urgent to do so if there aren't any other services available in a rural setting. In our study, we actually had several children who were from rural settings as far away as Wyoming and southern Colorado that were just so excited about having some kind of intervention. And so we're doing a smaller replication study at a rural site in northern Colorado called Hearts and Horses in Loveland, where we're getting, I think we have more kids that are in near Wyoming.
I'm wondering if I'm a parent with a son or a daughter who has an autism spectrum disorder and I'm seeking the right therapy for my child, why might I consider therapeutic horseback riding?
What's important to note about this study is that participants in our study were involved in a variety of other treatments. A combination of medication and other therapies that were individualized for their needs. So it's not possible for me to make a recommendation for a single right therapy, but certainly our significant improvements we observed in kids who participated in the 10 weeks of therapeutic riding in irritability, hyperactivity behaviors, along with social communication skills. And those were improvements regardless of the child's age range. And our age range was 6 to 16, and it was regardless of IQ or gender. Therefore, I think therapeutic riding might be a very viable option for additional therapy, maybe an adjunct therapy to target specific behaviors like irritability, hyperactivity, or even, social communication skills.
In your discussion, when you talk about the mechanism of therapeutic action, you point to joint attention and movement experiences as maybe the mediators of improvement in behavior and social communication in the children that you studied. I'm wondering, how did you select those two qualities, and how might you best measure these in the future as treatment mediators?
Well, there has been some literature, different sources, occupational therapists have written about the movement experiences, the rhythmic movement of the horse and the calming nature of the warmth of the horse when you're riding. The Temple Grandin also, who is an accomplished adult with autism, has written about the key element she thinks in horseback riding for her experience was that it helped decrease her anxiety and feelings and behavior, and that the teamwork of moving in sync with the horse's body and the horse's intuitive responsiveness to her as a rider was a key component for her to reducing her anxiety. And so in that idea, the teamwork is a part of joint attention, coordinating your own attention between an object and another person to communicate and share an interest or experience. And that's really what's happening in that therapeutic riding. You look in the direction that you want the horse to go. The horse is constantly very sensitive to the rider's movement and responding to that constantly. And there's also literature to support that targeting joint attention in skills in this population of kids with autism has shown to lead to improvements in self-regulation, social competence, and peer interactions, so social skills and spoken language. So it's a foundational skill.
You mentioned Temple Grandin talking about how she felt that horseback riding really helped reduce stress. And I'm wondering about future directions for your work with children in measuring stress levels.
Yeah, so we are in our pilot replication study right now. We are looking at salivary cortisol, and we are measuring, of course, we're taking baseline levels at the same time in the afternoon when the lessons are going to be 2 weeks prior and a week prior to their start of the lessons. But we're taking cortisol samples right before they get on the horse or right before they enter the barn activity group, and then 20 minutes after they've actually gotten off the horse. And I don't know what we'll find, but that's one of the physiological measures that we're looking at. We're also trying to see if we can get an objective look at some of those joint attention behaviors and social communication. So I've been working with a colleague, Dr. Maggie O'Hare, and we've developed an instrument. Actually, I'm assisting her, and we've modified it now. It's called the O'Hare M, and we've added some joint attention codes. So we're coding videos right now that we're taking pre and post writing and pre and post barn activity.
In closing, I wanted to say that this paper was a lot of fun to read, and it was clear that your research group had a lot of fun doing the study. I'm wondering if you might share with our listeners what was the best thing about this intervention.
Sure, and thank you. The best thing was there were a number of best things. Being able to take off out of the laboratory and go up to the writing center and see the mountains. That was awesome. But the other thing was even more than that was the parents, the kids. Parents would, I've never had a study where the parents actually come up and want to hug you and say thank you. So.
Well, that's wonderful. Listen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your work on this alternative treatment. It makes a big difference to parents and families for you to be willing to put so much time and effort, and for your team to put so much effort into studying something so unique. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We encourage listeners to tune into this and other podcasts in our collection, available online at jaacap.org. Thank you.